streaming 24/7. This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
Beautiful.
Oh,
God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top.
Wow. And here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retained his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome into the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Coming up on this episode of the podcast, going to have five fighter interviews. Four of those fighters are fighting on Friday night at Bellator 184 in Oklahoma. You're going to hear from Darion Caldwell, who's going to be in the main event, as he's going to be challenging Eduardo Dantas for the bantamweight title. Also going to be joined by two former Bellator champions that are going to be a part of this fight card. Daniel Strauss is going to be the co-main event, as he is going to be taking on Emmanuel Sanchez, and Pat Curran, who returns for the first time in 16 months, taking on John Teixeira. Plus, we will talk to Steve Cazzola, who's going to be a part of the preliminary card as he takes on Carrington Banks. Our other interview is with the fighter who's just coming off a victory last month and improved to 5-1 in his career, T. Edwards. He is trained out of the MMA lab in Arizona, so you hear from him, talk to him about his most recent victory and also the injury that he did suffer in that matchup. But of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/radioinfluence/. And of course, coming up on Fight on Saturday night, they will have UFC 216, the pay-per-view, for $59.99 in English and in Spanish. So be sure to check out my friends over there at Fight TV. Of course, this weekend, Bellator 184 on Friday, UFC 216 coming up on Saturday. Going to talk about both those fight cards in depth towards the end of this week's podcast. This week's podcast is going to start off by talking about some of the news and notes going on in MMA. Then we'll get into the interviews, and then in the final segment of the show, I will talk about Bellator 184 and UFC 216. Of course, I will have a preview podcast for both those fight cards coming up on Friday morning, as myself and Daniel Galvan are going to break down both of those fight cards. But let's get right into the MMA news and notes, some things that have gone on over the past couple of days. And it has been busy for the UFC and Bellator in terms of some fight booking, some fight changes as well. First up, the big news on Tuesday of this week, the UFC made it official. Max Holloway will defend the UFC featherweight title in the main event of UFC 218 on December the 2nd in Detroit against Frankie Edgar. This is a matchup that has been talked about now really for a couple of weeks, as Max Holloway was going through some contract issues with the UFC. So this fight is now official for UFC 218, which is lining up just to be an absolutely stacked lineup in Detroit. You look at the big heavyweight matchup of Alistair Overeem and Francis Ngannou. Overeem this week on the MMA Hour stating that he's being told that if he gets a win, he will get a title shot. You've got Henry Cejudo and Sergio Pettis, big matchup at 125 pounds. Also, while it's not official, it is expected that that fight card is going to have Justin Gaethje versus Eddie Alvarez, which, first off, for me, I think that the UFC should have that as a headliner of the Fox card later on that month, try to help build the brand of Justin Gaethje, because clearly they're trying to build Justin Gaethje up to a title matchup against Conor McGregor. But man, UFC 218, you gotta, as a consumer, you absolutely love that type of card, because that's the type of card that gets you to want to fork over $60. Also, in terms of a fight change, Bellator 185, which is going to take place later this month on October the 20th at the Mohegan Sun up in Connecticut, Muhammad King Mo Lawal is out of the fight card, was scheduled to take on Liam McGarry, pulled out due to undisclosed injury. and stepping in on relative short notice, 3 weeks notice, to fight Liam McGarry will be Bubba McDaniel. Of course, you may remember Bubba McDaniel from his time in the UFC and the Ultimate Fighter. Of course, got released by the UFC a couple of years ago. He is 29-10 in his career, and when you look at, since he exited the UFC, which was a while ago, back in 2014, he's fought in Bellator a couple of times, did get one loss in Bellator against Sorty. He's won 3 in a row. You look at his last two fights, both stoppage victories in the first round, most recently coming back in April at Strike League 1, he defeated Juan Torres, a guy who's got a pro record of 6-11, and also coming off a win against Andre Kavanaugh, who has a record of 7-13. So in terms of strength of opponent, not the greatest, but a guy like Bubba McDaniel, it probably, most likely, is very tough for him to get fights on the regional scene. There may not be a lot of guys that necessarily want to fight him. This is no longer the co-main event of Bellator 185. Now the co-main event of that fight card will be Brandon Ward versus David Rickles. Of course, that is at 170 pounds. And speaking of Bellator 185, I recently reported about the first wave of out-of-competition drug tests had come back. They all came back clean, including Alexander Shelmenko. And did confirm this week that Gegard Mousasi also was recently drug tested by the Mohegan Commission, and that drug test did come back clean. I think you may remember or heard about it. I talked about it. One of the things that I've heard is in Gegard Mousasi's contract is that drug testing must take place for his fights, which it's something of, necessarily you don't always see with fighters, but great to see, fighters really, outside of the UFC saying, hey, I want drug testing for myself and my opponent. Other fight bookings that have been announced over at the UFC, Cub Swanson versus Brian Ortega is going to take place at UFC Fight Night 123 on December the 9th. That is a FS1 card. And Cub Swanson saying it is the main event of that fight card. Of course, that's going to be taking place in Fresno, California. In terms of some other news items to mention, Rafael Nadal announced his retirement this week on the MMA Hour. When I saw that Rafael Nadal was going on Ariel's show and that he was going to be in studio, my thought was either he has signed a contract with Bellator or he's announcing retirements. And so good luck to Rafael Nadal in his retirement, and we'll see if he does stay retired. Speaking of that, a fighter who had recently retired, Kyle Noak, he has now got the fire back, and he is coming out of retirement. Also, Anthony Johnson coming out of retirement as well, as his manager, Ali Abdelaziz, said on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani on Monday, that Anthony Johnson is looking to return at heavyweight. Since he did retire and filed those paperworks, he will have to go through that 6-month waiting period with USADA, which is, of course, something that's been around and affected Andrea Lee. She was signed with the UFC, was going to make her UFC debut on short notice on Saturday this week. However, that did not take place. The reason she was pulled of it was because she does have a previous failed drug test, and due to that, she must go through 6 months of testing with USADA before she can take a UFC fight. And she had, she initially talked about this with James Lynch of MMA Oddsbreaker, and she's done various other interviews, and I pulled this quote from a story that was on MMAJunkie.com from Andrea Lee. She said, quote, "Just understand that when I was suspended and tested positive for a substance, the substance was a fluid pill. It was the use of a diuretic. I was not under the influence of anything else. I've never done steroids. I'm honestly a clean fighter. I give all my credit to my nutrition and NutriBio, a supplement company, eating well and training hard. But a lot of people are confused. They automatically assume that I was testing positive and cheating. I wasn't cheating. That's not what I was using the pill for. It was for weight cutting because I was bloated and I was retaining water. And I was worried that I was going to struggle, and I thought, why not use the fluid pill to help me pee? That's the one thing I want to clear the air about." And that was Andrea Lee to MMAJunkie.com. Well, look, I understand what you're saying there, but at the end of the day, it's a banned substance, so it's, you tested positive for a banned substance. And, that's, I think in, you know, we see all these, you know, failed drug tests, and I think automatically people say, oh, it's steroids. Doesn't mean that. But, you know, she's going to go through the process, and she said earlier this week that she does not have any plans to take any fights outside the UFC. She's going to go through this six-month time and, you know, make her UFC debut sometime in 2018. Also, some other news items to mention. Johnny Hendricks announced this week that he is training at Jackson Wink, which, you know, of course, things have not gone well for Johnny in his past couple fights. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of, you know, how different does he look moving out to Jackson Wink. Of course, you know, Johnny's been kind of, ever since Team Takedown went away, it's kind of been bouncing here and there. So we'll see how well he can do out there at Jackson Wink. Of course, UFC 216 is on Saturday. John Anik, Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier will be the play-by-play team for UFC 216. Also, I saw this note, and it's kind of, in a way, it's sad to me. Why are people around Antonio Bigfoot Silva allowing him to fight? I just don't understand why people around him are letting him fight. And if you have not seen, he is going to fight in glory. And for those who are not aware of the run that Antonio Bigfoot Silva has been on, you know, he's most notably coming off that loss in June to Vitaly Minnikov, a knockout loss in the second round. That was his fifth straight loss. He only has one win since the middle of 2013. In that time, he has lost to Cain Velasquez, had the no contest against Mark Hunt, lost against Arlovski, lost against Mir, had the win against Soapolele, and then since that win against Soapolele, five straight losses, Hunt, Struve, Nelson, Ivan, and Minnikov. So it's just a sad story. You know, this is a guy that, and when you look at all of his losses, with the exception of one fight, all those losses have come by knockout. And so it's just a sad thing for me to see, and I really hope there would be someone around Bigfoot Silva that ultimately would tell him it's time to call it a career, but apparently it's not. It's not going to be that time, and it is unfortunate. And the final thing to mention before we get into the interviews is Fabricio Werdum. Of course, Fabricio is going to be fighting on Saturday night. We'll talk a little bit more about his fight later on when I talk about UFC 216, but of course, everyone has seen the comments from last week, the media lunch, the altercation between Fabricio and Tony Ferguson, and of course, there's been a lot of stories that have been written about this, and you know, I don't want to rehash what other people have said. I will say this: on Sunday, when I was working the Tampa Bay Buccaneer game, one of the guys on the broadcast that works in the booth with us, He had said to me, he said, Jason, you know, that term in Spanish does not mean, you know, does not translate to the way in the United States that we translate that word. And, you know, this is the thing about Fabricio Werdum. I don't know Fabricio. I don't know him personally. I think I maybe interviewed him once, but, you know, I'm never going to pretend to know who he is. I don't know if he has a problem with the LGBT community. I don't know if he has that problem. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But right now, and I know Ben Folks had a great piece on MMA Junkie about this, and I think the act of Fabricio Werdum is wearing thin. And, you know, you look at the fact of, you know, he used that word with Tony Ferguson, you know, in Spanish or Portuguese. Also used it on an Instagram post with Daniel Cormier that he ultimately ended up deleting. I think that a lot of questions, and when Fabricio Werdum talks in media this week, I'm sure that's going to be a lot of the conversation between Werdum and the media, because, like I say, I don't know Fabricio Werdum, so I don't know if he has a problem with the LGBT community, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to look at his comments and automatically think that he does have a problem, so it'll be interesting to hear what Fabricio Werdum does say later on this week. Of course, he'll be taking part of the UFC 216 media day. So that is some of the news and notes. Oh, two other things I want to mention before I get into the interviews. The exclusive negotiating period for Fox Sports to re-up their deal with the UFC in terms of their television deal has expired. So the UFC is now able to go out and basically start shopping their television rights. And, you know, obviously this is a big part of the business plan for WME IMG. We'll see how well that ultimately goes for them. You know, I know a lot of people are pointing to ESPN. I'm sure ESPN will kick those tires and we'll see. But I mean, look, if the UFC is looking to get $400 million a year, I don't see anyone paying it. Now, could I see someone paying $250, $300 million? Potentially. But I think one of the issues that the UFC does have and is the fact of, you know, whoever is the broadcast rights holder, starting in 2019, it's got to be, I think, part of that dilemma is going to be, hey, are you going to give me some of those cards that you're currently giving FS1? And I think this is going to be a great opportunity, I think, for the UFC to reduce some of the amount of fight cards they do a year, you know, in terms of just giving fans better options, because there's a lot of fight cards that, you know, just me, even as someone who's a podcast host and, an MMA reporter, there's times I look at some of these fight cards and I go, man, I don't see why someone's going to sit at home on a Saturday night and watch those fight cards. So it's something interesting to see. I mean, you know, Apple get involved, will Amazon get involved? People mentioned Turner, but I've heard that really Turner's not really a player in terms of that. So I think ultimately it's probably going to come down to ESPN and FS1. And I think if you're FS1 and Fox Sports, you're probably sitting there and you want to see how this market plays out. And yes, you're playing it with a little bit of a fire. There's no question about that in terms of potentially you could lose the UFC, and the UFC is so big for FS1. I think ultimately at the end of the day, the UFC does end up back on FS1, but it's going to be interesting to see how much money the UFC does get. The final thing mentioned, not really news. It was a video on MMAfighting.com. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, I was watching this this week. It's a 18 questions with Rory McDonald and Douglas Lima. Really excellent video done on MMA Fighting. About various things of, if they're going to fight aliens and you have two people with you, who would you have with you, and various other things. So it was a really cool little video done out there. Really showed the personality of Rory McDonald and Douglas Lima. And those are the type of, interviews you do definitely like to hear, you kind of to find out who that fighter is away from what we see there on Fight Night. They also asked about turtlenecks, and Rory McDonald was basically saying, hey, it's the only turtleneck he has, and it's something that probably, a lot of memes out there about that. But of course, that fight is January 20th at the Forum there in LA. Big matchup. I mean, really probably the next big fight card, most likely, for Bellator. I mean, I think you can point to Bellator 185 with the debut of Gegard Mousasi, but I think in terms of that casual sports fan, the next Bellator fight card that they're probably going to get excited for is that fight card on January 20th. By the way, I don't know if it's been officially announced. Well, I guess it has been officially announced at this point, because it's on Bellator.com, is that Alessio Sakara will be getting a shot in the middleweight division, as he is going to challenge Rafael Carvalho in Italy in December. That's going to be December the 9th. That'll be an afternoon card here in the United States, nighttime there in Italy. And, it's going to be interesting when we get close to that fight. I'm going to definitely try to line up an interview with Alessio Sakara, because I remember when he came in the Bellator, I asked him about if his days at 185 were over, and he said, yeah, they are over. I'm not trying to cut down to 185 anymore. So it'll be interesting to see and kind of hear what Alessio Sakara does say about that. Of course, Bellator, 185 is, clearly their weakest division, and they got to, they have to do some things to get fans interested in that. Obviously, adding a Gegard Mousasi. I mean, the winner Shlemenko and Mousasi clearly is the number one contender there at a 185 pounds. So we'll see what happens there. But of course, Bellator 184 is coming up on Friday night, and we're going to get right into the interviews. First up, going to let you hear my conversation with Darion Caldwell. I had a chance to catch up with the man that's going to be challenging Eduardo Dantas on Friday night. Of course, we have not seen Darion in a long time. Of course, we were supposed to see him back in December of last year challenging Dantas. However, that fight ultimately did not take place. I did talk to him about that. We talked about his training at Alliance MMA, which he's been there at some time. And also, he makes a bold prediction on how he's going to get the victory on Friday night. All right, joining me now here on the MMA Report is the man that's going to be challenging Eduardo Dantas for the Bantamweight title coming Friday night. The main event of Bellator 184, Darion Caldwell. Darion, I appreciate the time. You have said on Instagram, it's hunting season. Do you think that you will ever become the hunt id?
I'm always a predator, man. I'm never going to be the prey. So I highly doubt I'll ever be. The answer is no. I'll never be the hunter. I'm always going to be the predator.
Of course, this fight was supposed to happen last year, unable to happen. So in terms of the recovery from, you know, getting back from the injury, how long did that actually keep you out of the gym?
We're going to get it on. In 1 week from now. So whatever happened prior is pretty much irrelevant. You know, we got a fight coming up, and I've been training extensively. I've been training hard. I got the best camp around me, the best coaches. So I'm just ready to go next Friday, October 6th.
I saw you put that on Instagram. You talked about, you know, training there at Alliance and how you've learned from something from everyone inside that gym. Is there anything, a story you can share about what someone has, you know, helped you to be, you know, evolve as a martial artist?
You know, it's everything from the coaches to the athletes, you know, little things, you know, in terms of just dieting, you know, the mental preparation where, you know, I haven't felt like I've really been able to show myself in the cage the way I want to, you know. And I don't know, you guys know Paulina Granada. She's a 105-pound female fighter for Combate America, you know. And she said something that really lit a light bulb, you know. She was like, "Well, do you feel like you've never reached your potential, you know, inside the cage? You know, there's always room for improvement." So. That right there really hit home. You know, it's always going to be room for improvement as long as, you know, I don't feel I've reached my full potential inside the cage, you know. So every fight, you're just going to see a better DC. You're going to see a better me.
In terms of reaching that full potential, what do you think is your best performance in the Bellator cage to this point?
I think everything is solid, you know. I feel like... Just knowing that, having the confidence, knowing that I've been on the highest level and competed against the best athletes in the world, and not only beat them but dominated them, I think that gives me the mental edge and the edge to compete and win.
I think the fight that a lot of people stick out to, where, you know, kind of that turning point where fans really started to recognize you, was your win over Joe Warren. Of course, both you and Eduardo have both fought Joe, but you have the submission victory over him where he had to go the distance with Joe. You know, in terms of your MMA wrestling, how different is your MMA wrestling in comparison to Joe's?
I'm really good on my feet, you know. Joe Warren, he's a Greco guy, you know. There's a lot of guys that were good on their feet, but what separates me from most wrestlers and pretty much all wrestlers, you know, is the way I ride, the riding time that I'm able to accumulate over the course of a wrestling match and a fight. You know, the way I maneuver in scrambles, you know, the mat time on the canvas, you know. That's what really separates me from all the other wrestlers who fight. You know, everyone can take someone down. Even a non-wrestler can take you down. But if you can't hold someone down, if you can't maneuver, scramble, and into dominant positions, then that doesn't translate too well for me in my eyes. So I feel like me being able to control people on the ground and scramble really well is what separates me.
Going back to Eduardo's last fight against Leandro Higa, when you sat back and watched that fight, what's your thoughts of what you saw from Eduardo that night?
Eduardo against who?
Leandro Higa, his last fight.
I think he was prepared to fight me that night, and it was an off night for him. I don't know. I really don't take much from it, you know. Who knows, you know, they can know each other, you know, and have planned that to not fight their best fights. But, you know, who knows? I didn't really I watched the fight, but I didn't go back to that fight. That's not a fight that I use as a reference. You know, I've used other fights as references to my style against Eduardo. And so I really didn't take much from that fight in terms of our matchup, you know?
You know, one of the things, I guess it's a cliche we hear in the fight game, is why this is a good fight for you, why it's a great stylistic matchup, and why, you know, one fighter feels he's just, his abilities are a bad matchup for their opponent. Why do you feel this is a great matchup stylistically for yourself?
Well, he's pretty flat foot, you know. Even though he's fast and he's rangy, he's got good timing, you know, I think the way I explode and cut the cut down distance is going to be a problem for him. I don't think he's ever seen a guy who moves it the way I move, who's as strong as I am, that for sure. And so I think that's going to be the difference. Like, I think me staying in the space with the explosiveness and making him keeping his back on the mat, keeping his back on the cage, you know, keeping him running, I think that's going to be the difference maker.
As we're talking, we're 7 days out from this fight. So what is the next 7 days like for you? Is it just the little minor preparation you got to do, or is pretty much camp is over at this point?
Yeah, we put our last hard days in these last few weeks. Now it's all about body maintenance, making sure I'm feeling good come Friday. You know, it's all about massages. It's all about, you know, looking good. It's all about, you know, a little bit of still just got to stay active, you know, but still running and stuff like that. But, you know, all the work is put in, you know, it's not really much I'm going to learn from now and 7 to lead up to the fight. That's going to change the course of this fight. So really it's just about body maintenance and staying focused mentally.
You talk about you're always going to be a hunter. Have you even allowed yourself to start thinking about who the next target is after Dantas?
Yeah, after I beat up on Dantas, you know, I'm welcoming all newcomers, all bantamweights. And that means Michael McDonald, he just came over. I'd love to smack him up. I have him for a Higo. You know, if he gets the win over Joe, you know, that'd be a cool matchup, you know, because obviously he won championships in other divisions or organizations. So I come up to or anybody else they want to bring over from the UFC, from the top 5 on, like, it's not really worth anybody in the back top 10. You know, if they're in the top 10 and they want to come over from the UFC, bring it on, I'll smack them up.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to watch this fight come on Friday night, October the 6th, live on Spike, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time, as Darren Caldwell will take on Eduardo Dantas. Any predictions on how you walk away with the belt?
Dantas is going to be sleeping 3 minutes, so tap now. Either one you want. Please check.
And there you have the bold prediction from Darion Caldwell, calling his shot to win in the first the opening minutes of Bellator 184's main event. So we'll see if that happens. And, you know, look, this is a big matchup. This is one of those fights that I have been looking forward to. And it's going to be interesting to me to see, you know, if Darion Caldwell's unable to get this fight to the ground, which I do believe he will get this fight to the ground. But if this becomes a stand-up fight, going to be interesting to see how it does play out. Now, the co-main event of this fight card, big matchup at 145 pounds. We'll see the return of the former Bellator featherweight champion, Daniel Strauss. This will be his first fight since losing the title to Patricio Pitbull back in April. Bellator 178. He's going to take on Emmanuel Sanchez. Of course, Sanchez, a tough guy, one of the best guys there at 145 pounds. I did have a chance to talk with Daniel Strauss. We talked about his move from American Top Team to Combat Club. If you follow Daniel Strauss on social media, you knew about that. We also talked about positivity based on an Instagram post that he had out there. Talked about his fight against Emmanuel Sanchez. And does he think that a win here sets himself up in line for a title shot? Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio, Influence Man, is going to be the co-main event of Friday's Bellator 184 as he takes on Emmanuel Sanchez. It is Daniel Strauss. Daniel, how's it going, man?
What's going on, brother? How you feeling?
I'm doing good, man. Of course, we're both residents of Florida, so I got to ask you, how did Hurricane Irma affect your preparations for this matchup?
I fucked it all up. I mean, it's Hurricane Irma. That's what she does. It affected it a little bit. You know, mentally, it didn't do much to me. I mean, it just took a couple, it took about 3 weeks from training, actually. You know, our house wasn't completely, like, destroyed or anything. There wasn't any damage. It was just, you know, I didn't have power for about 12 days. I was out of power for over a week. You know, businesses are shut down. You know, gyms were shut down at one point. We had to do practices outside. So yeah, it definitely had an effect on it. You know, mentally also thinking about me not being able to practice while my opponent's practicing. You know, that fucks with you a little bit, but it's nothing serious. Nothing that, you know, I can't handle or I can't adapt to. So Hurricane Irma, fuck you. It really sucks. But, yeah, man, it is what it is. And it's the time to get the job done.
Shortly after it, on Instagram, you put out a picture, which was a bumper sticker of positivity, where you said nothing but positivity. Was it something, you know, just kind of with everything going on with yourself and over the past couple months that you just kind of, you're trying to get rid of those negative vibes?
No, positivity, man, it has to do with this fight. It has to do with that, but in overall general, In overall basis, man, I need to start being more positive. I'm not really such a negative thinker, but I'm always thinking about what if. What if this? What if that? What if that? And it got me away from being who I was. You know what I mean? It got me away from, you know, the positive thinking that I've always been doing. So, actually, I took my daughter and my child's mom. We all went to Bahamas for our vacation a little bit after our birthdays. And we happened to be talking about being positive. And as soon as I walked past this pole, there's this sticker that says positivity. So I thought it was perfect, man. It was like nothing but a sign to me. So I took the picture back in July. But, you know, I felt when I posted it, it was the appropriate time for me to post. So, yeah, that's what that's for.
And, of course, anybody else that follows you on social media, the thing they'll notice is working with Henry Hoof and the Combat Club. What ultimately brought on that decision of why you needed to maybe make a little change there?
Needed a little change. I've been in this game for a little bit now, and for a little minute. And, you know, staying one place has never been one thing that's going to, like, help me continue to grow. You know, I did all the growing that I could do with who I was with when I was in Cincinnati. And I got the best out of it, and I needed to move on if I was going to continue my career. Moved to the American Top Team, and I got a lot of great things out there. A lot of great coaches, a lot of great training partners, a lot of, you know, great little things here and there. And after my last fight, before my last fight, I knew it was just one of those things where I needed to go ahead and reset my mind and get somewhere and start being fresh again. So that was my move towards Henry Hoof. He's close. Nowhere that I got to go, you know, super travel far for. But, you know, I started working with him. The guys there, we all click. So it just kind of happened that way.
And, of course, when everyone thinks of Henry Hoof, they think about the striking aspect. In terms of various people you've been around throughout your career, from your journey from Cincinnati and South Florida, what is unique about how he coaches striking?
For me, it was just how he breaks it down. You know, how he broke it down to me and, you know, me trying to be all, not that I'm a flashy, you know, kickboxer or anything like that, but, you know, me trying to see what other people are doing and mimic this, and it's not helping me when he's just like, look, do this. This is simple. This is simple. This gets the job done. Do it this way. Turn your hips this way. You know, step that way. Do this. Do that. And for me, it was just breaking it down a little bit easier, breaking it down, making me understand it a little bit more, and that's where I was at. So Henry Hoof brings a lot to the table when it comes to coaching, man. He's just one of those guys that just knows how to get the job done.
And when I look at this fight card on Friday, I look at your fight and I look at the current Sheriff fight is kind of like, I don't know if Bellator's viewing this as essentially the number one contender is going to walk out of one of these two fights. Is that your view of like, look, you know, I'm going on after that fight. Whatever happens that fight, I have to do something more spectacular to make my case to be, you know, next in line for a title shot.
Really, for me, it really doesn't matter. You know what I mean? In my eyes, for anybody to go fight for that belt, they're going to fight for me. So whether I win this fight and fight for the belt or I win this fight and challenge the next guy that fought too, they're going to have to fight for that belt, fight me to get to that belt too. So either way, you know, I'm not really worried about it. I think that's been my biggest problem is just so focused on the belt, and I get to get back to just focusing on fighting. You know, if I'm focusing on fighting, then everything else will fall into place.
Emmanuel is a guy that's been around Bellator a long time, but the whether people call it a knock or not is a fact of all the decisions that he has on his record and being in some very close fights. For you, what's your thought on him as an opponent and the biggest strengths that he's going to bring to you on fight night?
The fact that he can go all three rounds and keep going all three rounds and, you know, go hard all three rounds, that says something, you know what I mean? Give up in the second, third, you know, whatever. But, you know, he keeps coming. You know, those close fights aren't fights that, like, oh, he just made it by the skin of the teeth. He consistently has close fights, which means that I tell you, he's going to keep coming. You know what I mean? He has a strong gas tank. He's going to keep coming forward. And that's what I expect from him. You know, the decisions doesn't mean shit. The decisions just mean that the judges looked at it in his favor. So, I mean, if you read past that, then you read into, you know, this guy can come. This guy can come and bang. This guy's going to keep coming and banging, and he's not going to stop till that bell's ring. So, you know, if you look at my record, I got decisions too. You know, at one point, a lot of people used to say, oh, you only have decisions. Yeah, well, you know, that's what it takes sometimes to get the job done. Sometimes these guys are hard to finish, you know what I mean? I can tell you this, he's not about to finish me. So if we go and I don't finish him, we're going to the last bell. You know what I mean? That doesn't make me a pushover. Doesn't make him a pushover. It just makes it what it is. So he's a very formal opponent, very good, and I'm excited for it.
When you had several decisions come back to back, and when people would maybe say, oh, he's a guy who always goes decision. I mean, decisionator, I think, is something that gets thrown out there. Did that bother you at all when people would say that about you, or is it one of those things of, you know what, those people are my camp. The noise that's outside of my camp, I don't even worry about.
The young me, I did used to worry about it. You know what I mean? I used to try to like. You know, that's why you don't see me on Twitter as much. You know what I mean? Like, I used to have to battle with people talking shit all the time, and now I'm doing it with my inboxes, and it's like, it's not called for. You motherfuckers aren't in there. You know what I mean? You don't know what it's like when a guy punches you 15 times in the face and you have one eye closed and you're still trying to bang it out with a guy and you end up winning by decision. That's more than just, hey, a decision. That's a fucking victory. You know what I'm saying? That's a fucking victory. So, to all those, it's part of the game.
And of course, everyone's gonna be able to watch this fight come on Friday night. One of the things I always like to ask anybody that comes on is about what they want fans to know about them. You know, for you as at this point in your career, I mean, obviously you've been in Bellator a long time. Is there something about Daniel Strauss that maybe the fans don't know?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot that the fans don't know. I take this, this sport to heart. It's not just me out there fighting for, a little bit of money. It's not me out there just fighting for the glory. There's a lot that goes behind this, man. This is out here to feed my family out, and everybody knows that. Everybody knows, our job or whatever, but what people don't know about me is how deeply rooted this is. You know, I could be a construction worker. And I could give a fuck about the rest of the shit. You know what I mean? I could find another job to support my family. But this is absolutely 100% what I want to be doing with my life. So, yeah, you know, fans just need to know that's who I am, man. I'm here for the long haul.
A lot of interesting stuff there from Daniel Strauss, from his transition to the Combat Club, to Positivity, and this fight against Emmanuel Sanchez. You know, Emmanuel's one of those guys. He's always gotten to that one point and he couldn't take that next step, and we'll see if he can take that next step on Friday night. And, you know, going back to what, you know, Strauss has said about the change to the Combat Club, there's been, you know, multiple guys that have left American Top Team over the last, year or so. And, you know, and you heard what Daniel Strauss had to say there. And, you know, really, I can tell you, I've been asking a lot of people about what's going on in American Top Team, why guys are leaving, and I will tell you, no one's talking. I guess that's about the best way to put it, in terms of some of the things that have gone there. And, of course, you've seen some of the guys that have left. You know, Daniel Strauss. Strauss was one of the first names I'd actually heard, you know, and when you looked at, Robbie Lawler, probably the biggest name to leave that gym. And, of course, he's doing some training there at the Combat Club, which, Henry Hoof is doing a lot of great things there. Talking to some people saying that, really Henry has put a great coaching staff together. You know, he's handling the striking. He's got, you know, people coming in to handle the wrestling and the jiu-jitsu and the grappling and all that. So it's, very interesting to see what Daniel Strauss looks like on Friday night as he takes on Emmanuel Sanchez. Also on Friday night, we'll see another Bellator featherweight, former featherweight champion, and that is Pat Curran. He's going to be returning for the first time in 16 months. He's been out due to an injury. He is going to be taking on John Teixeira. This is actually a matchup that was scheduled to take place late last year. However, the injury forced Curran out of that matchup. So I had a chance to have a really fascinating conversation with Pat Curran. Talked about the injury, the return from it. The retirement comes up in this interview as well. As you know, he talked about what doctors are telling him, how, you know, he really was unsure. And we talked about his matchup on Friday night against John Teixeira. All right, joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio, Influence Man is going to return to the Bellator cage for the first time in 16 months, going Friday night, October the 6th. Pat Curran, he takes on John Teixeira. Pat, I appreciate the time. 145 pounds at Bellator, one of the marquee divisions. Obviously, you've been a part of this division for a long time, but because of being on the sidelines for the amount of time you have, do you kind of feel like you've become the forgotten guy in this division?
I don't really feel that way, but I know that just happens, especially with a long layoff and delayed. This is a very fast-paced sport. There's a lot of new guys coming in, so it just happens with an injury like this. So I just have to make my way back little by little, and it starts October 6th once I get back in the cage and put on a great performance for everybody.
What was the toughest part for you being on the sideline with the injury? Was it just the fact of just not being able to compete?
Yeah, I was kind of at a crossroads. I wasn't sure if my body would allow me to continue to fight or not. I've been dealing with an injury for a long time, and it got to the point where I needed to have surgery. And the doctor recommended me to pretty much sit on the sidelines and start coaching, look into another aspect of the sport, and instead of, just putting the wear and tear on my body, maybe this is a sign that you need to do something else or put your focus energy into something else. So that was really kind of hard for me to hear from him, but it's just the reality of it. I'm not young. We're not staying young forever. Your body's going to break down on you eventually, especially with a sport like this. So it was very hard for me to cope at in the beginning, but, over time I got stronger. My body's getting back to the way it used to be. And, I'm confident in my recovery right now where, I can step back in the cage and just, feel comfortable like I did, last fight and so on. So, it's very, very difficult to deal with an injury that will put you away for a year. It's a long layoff for an athlete. And you have to keep yourself busy and kind of just take the right steps into recovering from it.
Was there ever a point that you thought retirement was an option?
Yeah, it has to be an option. You can't fight forever. It's really hard to make a career at it. And even those who do make a career at it, you know, it's not going to last forever. So you have to always be thinking about retirement, but you don't know when to retire. That's the really hard part to decide, you know, when do you hang up the gloves? You know, you're really, really passionate about the sport. You love it, but at the same time, like, you know, eventually it's going to come to an end. So I don't know. It's going to be really difficult for me to kind of realize that. And, you know, I don't think I'm ready to retire yet. My body I'm still young. I should be in my prime, and you know, I just have to take the right measures during training to, you know, work around my injury and just to make it stronger by doing certain exercises. So, but eventually I will have to retire. I'm just not ready for it yet.
I mean, Mitch, I was going to say, man, you're a young guy. You're only 30 years old. Do you at all think, as you look back on your career, that those two tournaments you took place in may have taken years off your career?
I don't know if it was taking years off my career from the tournaments or the fights itself, but I would definitely say the training and the training camps I've had in my past took years off my training or years off my career. Yeah, I trained really hard. I would spar twice a week, you know, lift heavy weights, and I just wasn't really training smart to prep for a training camp. You know, we thought it was the right thing to do at the time, but really you're just breaking your body down. You're injuring yourself during training camps, and now you have to, you know, continue to train and push through it. We had that mentality, you know, if you're not hurt going into a training camp, you're not hurt going into a fight, then you didn't have the right training camp. That was the mentality that we had. So, you know, it wasn't the smart way to train back then. And I'm kind of paying for the price right now dealing with the consequences of it. But, you know, I'm still young enough where my body is able to, you know, work around the injuries. I'm still 100% in my mind, you know, during my training. So I don't think it's really going to play effect, especially for the next couple of years. But yeah, it's just training camps, man. Training camps, not really taking the right measures of watching my keeping, you know, just listening to my body, I guess, mm-hmm. You know, listening to my body saying, okay, this part hurts, or you're sore here, even maybe you should rest this area. We kind of just push through it, and eventually you would, you know, tear something or break something. And, you know, that wasn't the right way to approach training back then.
In terms of sparring now, is it just one time a week?
Yep. I'm once a week with the right partner, the guy that fits my opponent's style. And I'm not looking to, you know, go in, stand toe-to-toe with somebody and just, you know, slug it out now. So now it's like a lot of strategy, a lot of movement. Not really trying to get hit as much. You know, it does happen, but you just have to pick and choose when the right days are to spar and who you're sparring with.
And your opponent here, John Teixeira, his last six fights have gone to decision. Four of those six are split decisions. You know, I guess durable would probably be a word that we brought up with him. But as you have evaluated him, what really sticks out to you?
He is extremely tough, man. He has a chin. He definitely can take a punch. He doesn't show that he gets hurt very often. He stays in the pocket. He throws big right hooks, left hooks, you know, very explosive puncher inside the pocket, and he presses forward a lot. So, you know, he's a very dangerous fighter, you know, because if you do get into an exchange with him, it's the, you know, the second, third punch that he throws that you know, he has bad intention for. He's trying to knock you out with every punch he throws, but he stays in the pocket and throws multiple punches. And on top of that, you know, he does have good takedown defense. He throws a lot of kicks from the outside, it seems like. And, you know, just good basic kickboxing skills. And on top of that, like I said, he just has a chin. You know, he can take a really hard punch, and any guy that can take a punch and has knockout power is very dangerous.
Do you think you're going to have any cage rust or jitters, you know, since you have been on the sidelines?
You know, I don't think so. You know, I've had a little bit of time off from, or I had a lot of time off from the injury, but, you know, I feel like it's like riding a bike. Once you're back on the mat, you're moving around, you start shadow boxing, grappling again, it just kind of comes right back to you, to where you used to be. So right now I just have to focus. My main focus was on getting my conditioning up, my endurance up, and my timing back. And the timing came back right away. I really don't think there's going to be any ring rust going into this fight.
Of course, this division's gone through some changes. You know, the belt changing hands. Patricio now back as a champion. What's your view of this division right now? And with the win, I mean, do you feel like you should leapfrog maybe potentially the winner of Strauss and Pitbull as the next, or Strauss and Sanchez as the next title challenger?
Honestly, I would love to get a rematch with Pitbull. You know, if I win this fight, I'm really going to push for a rematch against Patricio. You know, I would be three fights in a row for winning a win streak for me. And, you know, I can't hurt to try to push for it. You know, we're 1-1. We're tied with our fights. I think a trilogy would make sense.
Is that one of those fights, the rematch? Does it all haunt you at all of not being able to perform the way you wanted to on that night?
Oh, of course. Of course. I know I'm a much better athlete, and I know I could have had a lot better of a performance, but, you know, I had a lot of personal things going on, and it just seems like if your personal life isn't in order, you know, you're mentally just not in it during the fight. And it was just one of those occasions where I just wasn't mentally in it. And, showed during that fight. You know, he definitely got the better of me the full fight, and you know, you never forget a loss. Every loss that I've had, you know, you don't forget it. You have to learn from it. Don't make the same mistakes twice. And I'm really hoping I can get back in there for a third fight against him, and, you know, prove to myself and everybody that I am the better fighter.
You mentioned a little while ago about while you were, you know, recovering, you were coaching guys, and I saw some stuff on your Facebook where you were helping people out. Well, what was your biggest takeaway of teaching someone? I've had a chance to talk to guys, and they say it's just about, you know, realizing how much of it's just the basics. You got to have those techniques down. For you, what was your biggest takeaway just kind of sitting back and coaching people?
You know, you get to see things from a different perspective, and really break down the technique. And, you know, just kind of see, it almost like reminds yourself, like when you started, and, you know, you're trying to break down the moves to make it as simple as possible to where these guys can catch on to it as quickly as possible. And, you know, I really enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. But I guess the main reason is just the technique. You know, there's so many movements and aspects that go into like throwing a punch or doing a guillotine or an armbar that you really have to break it down step by step, and it helps you understand it a little bit better.
What's the biggest piece of advice you give to young fighters in your gym?
Yeah, just you gotta stay active, stay consistent. You know, you can't show up once a week and just half-ass it. You know, you have to keep your ears open, listen to your coaches. Yeah, you have to want it every day. You go into the gym, you train 110% every training session. You put everything you have into it, and you know, just the want. You have to want it. You have to have the will to want to make this a career and a living.
Very fascinating interview there with Pat Curran. Was a lot of interesting things coming out of that interview, especially about the injury and, you know, just kind of that road back to where he's at now. And, you know, and I truly do feel that Pat Curran is kind of the forgotten guy at 145 pounds. And if he can go out there and have a spectacular victory, he definitely could make his case for another shot there with Pitbull. Of course, Pitbull is going to be defending the featherweight title in November against Daniel Vichel. So we'll see how that matchup does go down. Now, on the preliminary card of Bellator 184, there is a lightweight matchup that I am very interested in, and that is with our next guest, Steve Cazola. He is going to be taking on Carrington Banks. Of course, Steve is coming off that dynamic win earlier this year. Really was kind of the coming out party to the Bellator fans for Steve Cazola there in Chicago. So I had a chance to catch up with Steve and talk to him about his matchup on Friday night against Carrington Banks. All right, joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, man's going to be a part of Bellator 184 coming Friday night, October the 6th. He takes on Carrington Banks. It is Steve Cazola, who is coming off that 28-second win at Bellator 175. Steve, is that the highlight of your career at this point, that night, with it being in Chicago and how quick it happened?
Hey, Jason, well, first of all, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's definitely up there, man. I've had a lot of amazing moments in this, you know, career, even, you know, as short as it is. But, man, going back home and being at Chicago, being on the main card and getting a quick devastating knockout and being 100% healthy and ready to go. I mean, doesn't get much better than that. So it's definitely up there.
So, of course, it's been a couple of months since that fight took place. Was it right back into the gym, or did you take some kind of time off to just let the body kind of get back to where it needed to be?
I mean, I usually, I try to take a week off, but, it's gotten always shorter and shorter. I mean, with a great performance like that and coming out healthy, I mean, I want to get back to getting better as soon as humanly possible in the gym. You know, during that time when I'm out of the gym, I always work on my mind, reading my books, listening to my podcasts, audiobooks, meditating. So during that time, I'll really just, get right back to growing my mind, growing my spirit. And then when it's time to get back to hard work, as far as physical activity in the gym, and the body's all 100% healed up from training camp, and then we'll get right back in there and get going as soon as humanly possible. I love what I do. I love being in the gym. I work in the gym. I train in the gym. I live in the gym. So always a pleasure to be in there.
When you have that off time from a fight, do you find yourself maybe watching other fights and maybe trying to work on the mental side of the game, maybe trying to see what other guys, what they're doing and how you can incorporate it into your own game?
Absolutely. I mean, you got to look at the best in the world and see why are they the best in the world? What is it about their personality? What is it about their skill set? Whether it's their striking, their grappling, their takedowns, what really separates them from the pack as being one of the best in the best. And I'm always looking to evaluate and kind of break down and see what would be best for me? What's something that I can kind of take and mold to myself? What is it about their personality that we share that I can use that they're using, maybe utilizing better than me? What is it about their striking, their wrestling, their jujitsu that, that I see that I'm like, wow, that's really effective. That's really useful. Can I work that in my game? I'll visualize it. I'll try it in practice. I'll talk to my coaches like, hey, I saw this. What do you think about this? And I mean, it's a constant analyst and evaluation of always trying to get better.
This matchup, I think, is the way people are talking about, kind of the same way you had the matchup with Jake Roberts. They're talking, hey, these two rising prospects in the Bellator lightweight division, Carrington Banks, just like yourself, undefeated. But for you, is this a totally different matchup?
It is. Everyone's different. I mean, we do share a similar opponent in Jake, and their backgrounds were similar as far as like being a wrestler and everything like that. But I do think that Carrington is that being said, he is a different person. He is a different fighter. He has a more defined skill set, especially in the wrestling. He's more credentialed in the wrestling, and he definitely prefers to grind opponents out and try and steal fights. And that's okay. We've made our proper adjustments. We've done the preparation that is needed to beat him in every aspect, whether it's striking, grappling, and we're going to get a finish, whether it be in the first, second, or third round. It's going to be my night. It's going to be my victory, and it's going to be on to the next.
What is the key in not getting into a grinding type fight? Is it more of just imposing your will? Is it as simple as that?
Absolutely. I mean, you got to go in there respecting the opponent in all areas, whether it be their strength or weakness. You never take anyone lightly. That's the first priority. But you always got to establish what you want to do. What is your game plan? What, establish the distance that you want to establish, establish the tempo, establish the pace, and anything that they try to do, making sure you got your, P's and Q's on point. You're ready to counter. You're ready to react and adjust. And, make sure you're going in for that finish, man, because I'm not the type of person that's going in to just, skate on by. I don't train to compete. I train to dominate, and that's what I've been showing in my fights.
You're a guy, all your wins are coming by finish. You've never even made it to the third round. Is there all part of you that wants to have a 15-minute type war where you and your opponent just go at it for 15 minutes? Or is it like, nah, man, I'm just trying to get in and out of there as quick as possible?
There's no appeal to it. But again, like I just said, I don't train to compete. I train to dominate, and I want to show these guys that they're not on my level and that I can, and that I'm a finisher, and plus, 15 minutes of a grinding fight, that puts a lot of wear and tear on your body. It could potentially put, some damage to your brain. The longer you're in there, it's like gambling. The more you're likely to, you're not going to walk out of there any better than you walked in. That's for sure. So I'm trying to get in there, finish the fight in devastating fashion, whether it be striking or a submission. And, you get paid the same whether it's 28 seconds or 15 minutes. So I'm just trying to go in there, assert my dominance, cash my check, and go hang out with my family.
A lightweight division is a stacked division in Bellator. We're just coming off that car where, you had Patrycki and Benson. And people will look at you, and I think they're still going to call you a prospect. I don't know whether you like that term or not. But where do you think you are right now in this 155-pound division?
I think I'm the best, in all honesty. I really know I can be champion. At this point in time, I know I can beat anyone in the top five, top 10, whatever they want to give me. It's just that they, you know, based upon my record and how many fights I've had from, this is where they're assuming I'm at. But with each, you know, opportunity presents a new opportunity for myself to go in there and insert my dominance and show them like, hey, you know, if you pay me and, you know, pay me the right money, I'll fight all these top names and show that I'm one of the best 155 pounders in the world.
In terms of Carrington, you know, they talk about stylistically why you love a matchup. Is there something in particular about this fight of why you just love this matchup? Or is it part of it is just like, hey, I believe this is the toughest guy that I've ever stepped into the cage with on fight night?
You know, the next guy is always the toughest guy in my mind in all aspects. And that's what keeps me motivated in training. You know, you don't take anyone lightly in any certain aspect. So although he's primarily a wrestler and, you know, although he has technically less fights than, you know, someone like Jake Roberts, even though it's just by, you know, a small margin, you know, you don't get ahead of yourself or get cocky anywhere. I always prepare like I'm going up against the best in the world because anybody can beat anyone on any given day. So I go in there, put myself in the best position possible to go in there and get a victory. And it doesn't matter if it's standing, I'm ready. Wrestling, I'm ready. Jiu-jitsu, I'm ready. And I'm just going to show that gap of where, you know, everyone perceives me to be as a contender and where I know I'm at, which is championship level.
I did see on your social media, you're selling your shirts, not just men's shirts, but also female shirts. So where can my listeners go out and support you by buying your shirt?
Clinchgear.com. You know, shout out to Clinchgear. They've been my clothing sponsor since my beginning of my Bellator career. They've always been there for me, helping me out. And, you know, no matter what. So, you know, clinchgear.com, Jeff and Greg Brady, thank you guys so much for everything that, you know, all their support and everything they've done for me. Check them out. They sell, you know, some the best workout apparel, you know, out there. So definitely Clinchgear is a place to be.
You mentioned about, hey, I'm going out there to get the finish. I'm going out there to be dominant. Is there ever a preferred method of whether it's knockout or submission?
Absolutely not. You know, the knockout's just been the one that's been occurring the most frequently lately, which is awesome. It's something that even the most mediocre fan can understand is, you know, throwing hands and putting someone unconscious. But, you know, I love jiu-jitsu. I've been improving my jiu-jitsu so much thanks to 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu in Oceanside with Gio Martinez and all the 10th Planet freaks. So if there's an opening where I can finish the fight by submission, guarantee I'm going to take it.
Did your love of jiu-jitsu take some time or was it instant?
My love for martial arts has always been instant. I just had a background in striking at first. I did Taekwondo when I was younger and received my black belt at a young age. And once I got back into the, you know, mixed martial arts, I got in, you know, at 19 years old and I started doing everything, striking, wrestling, jiu-jitsu all at one. And I fell in love with it as a whole, you know, and I think that's what's going to also separate here is that, you know, I'm not just partial to just one aspect or just love and focus on one aspect. I focus on everything and looking to get improve and get better at everything.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight coming up on Friday night, October the 6th, Bellator 184, as you are taking on Carrington Banks. Steve, I really appreciate time. And let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Well, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Steve Cazola MMA. Thank you so much to all my sponsors, my family, my teammates, my coaches for all your support. And tune in October 16th to my ninth finish in a row.
And that was my conversation with Steve Cazola. Really appreciate him coming on the podcast. Talk about his fight coming up on Friday night on the prelims of Bellator 184. Takes on Carrington Banks. I always talk about, you know, Bellator has to put fights on those preliminary cards. I mean, look, yes, they're going to put fights on the prelims that are about selling tickets, but they have to put fights on those prelims to get people to go on to Bellator.com and watch these fights. And they are definitely doing that with Cazola and Banks. I mean, you could make the case that that fight maybe should be on the main card, but a great matchup there. Looking forward to seeing how that one does play out. Now, my final interview here on this episode of the MMA Report podcast is with T. Edwards, trains out of the MMA lab there in Arizona. I did have a chance to catch up with him. He's coming off a victory back on September the 23rd that improved him to 5-1. So I had a chance to catch up with him, talk to him about that fight, the injury he suffered in that matchup, and what is next for him. Joining me now is a man that is now 5-1 in his career. Another stoppage victory. T. Edwards trains out of the MMA lab in Arizona. T, congratulations on the victory. Happy belated birthday. Let me first off start there, man. You have a birthday during fight training camp. So can you not celebrate your birthday at that point? Do you kind of have to wait?
Yeah, I didn't really get to do much. We kind of combined the after party and my birthday all into one event. It was birthday was like a week or two out from training camp, so I wasn't really eating much. So, yeah, we kind of skipped over it.
Unfortunately, in the fight, the great part is you got the victory. Unfortunately, you did break your hand in the fight. So what's it like, you know, having to sit on the sidelines and you know you can't do anything with that hand?
It's awful. I'm always one to train, whether I'm in camp or out of camp. I like to work out. I like to train. So now I'm severely limited because it's my dominant hand. So not only is training hard, just life has become a lot more stressful because I can't brush my teeth and do anything like without taking 20 minutes. So, yeah, it kind of sucks.
I mean, we're so much of a society if we live on our phones. You know, I'm a business owner. Everything I do is on my phone. So is it tough like sending a text message?
Yeah, everything is really like left-handed is like my life right now. So people are like, oh, you're taking too long to text me back. Like, why don't you respond? I'm like, because my left thumb is super sore because it's not used to doing this much work. So, yeah, we're having some problems.
I did have a chance to see your previous fight for the most recent one, the one in Tachi. And I was thinking about, as I was listening to the commentary and how the fight went, do you think that people underestimate your striking game?
They did. I don't know if they're still going to. I mean, since I've started MMA, I haven't really wrestled that much. So I don't know if people just don't watch film or when they look up my name, like my wrestling videos come up first. So they just assume like, you know, short, stocky dude is probably going to wrestle. But I much prefer to, you know, throw punches and kind of heavy handed. So I don't know. I guess they seem to keep trying to trade punches with me. So I guess they are underestimating it a little bit. I don't know.
As I was looking up your fights on YouTube, it was pretty much nothing but your wrestling footage. You, of course, from Virginia, you end up at Arizona State. So how does the guy in Virginia end up going to Arizona State?
Well, we kind of had not a feeder program exactly, but a bunch of our alumni went over to ASU out of high school. So Brian Stith was one of our coaches at Cox, or he was one of our teammates at Cox under my head coach. And then he went off to ASU to wrestle like a national finalist. And then we sent a couple more guys out there. So when I was looking for colleges to go to, you know, it's the West Coast. I heard, one, great things about the school and the wrestling program. Two, it's like amazing weather out here. It was kind of a big party school, which was pretty enticing when you're 18 years old. So yeah, they had some ways to incentivize me to get out there.
I remember being at a Super Bowl out there a couple of years ago and had some good times in Scottsdale. I'll say that. Had some good times out there. You majored in exercise and wellness. Was that something growing up that you wanted to, you know, further your advancement in education in terms of, you know, exercise and wellness?
Yeah, I mean, my parents were personal trainers for a little bit, and that kind of got me into it. About 15 or 16, I kind of started getting into the weight room and fell in love with it. And I've always been real particular on, like, how I train and the coaches I surround myself with. So I like to ensure that I know just as much as the coaches do, because no one knows your body more specifically than you do. So you know all the little ins and outs when it comes to what fits your training style the best. So instead of leaving it up to the hands of some, you know, coaches who are try to customize as much as they can, they don't know as much as, you know, you do, obviously. So I wanted to be the one to make sure I can tailor my programs and my training to ensure that it gives me the best results possible.
Do you think having that education allows you a little bit of up on other guys of just knowing how to take care of your body and maximizing your performance when it comes to fight night?
Yeah, definitely. I think my whole training, like I said, my training program is designed specifically around my body type, my metabolism, my fighting style, my muscle fiber. Everything is
I've created specifically based off of experience, trial and error, to make sure, it fits me exactly. And then I worked in physical therapy for a little bit, so I know how to rehab most stuff. I know how to taper off my body, do my nutrition, everything, come to fight camp, so I'm feeling pretty good.
And, as you've made this transition, may I mention, Extreme, we off to a great start. You did have that one loss, decision loss. What's the biggest takeaway you took from that?
I don't like to take anything away from anybody. I don't like to count that loss. It's obviously there, but it wasn't a reflection of my capabilities at all. I wasn't really training that much. We had a family vacation about 2 weeks before the fight. I was in Turks and Caicos for 2 weeks, drinking and partying. I came back. I had a week and a half to kind of train. I really wasn't on a program or anything. I was transitioning between fight teams. So there's a lot of things that were just that normally wouldn't happen or normally wouldn't be a part of the equation that kind of led to that loss. So though I learned from it, and I learned, to keep my head on straight and to make sure I'm doing all the right things, I know that's an anomaly. That would never happen ever again. So it's not really, I don't let it get to me too much.
One of the things I always like to ask fighters is there's perceptions versus realities and what you want the fans to know about you. So what's the biggest thing you would want fans to know about, who you are as a person and as a fighter?
From what everybody tells me, I don't seem like a fighter. I don't have a fighter, aura to me. I'm not I'm very familiar with fitness and strength and conditioning, but I'm not the meathead kind of gym rat. I'm pretty intelligent. I like to do other things. I was kind of not nerdy growing up, but I played card games, little figurines and shit or stuff like that. And then I just, got into combat sports when I was wrestling. And then I just, for some odd reason, I enjoy violence. It's not a scary thing. It's kind of a fun, it's a sport to me. So I'm not a stereotypical, I like to fight, kind of guy, but I just one of the things I enjoy.
Are there any friends or family you have that are just shocked that you're a professional fighter?
Pretty much everyone besides my mom and my dad that have kind of seen me grow up in wrestling and seen me it's kind of a light switch, how they describe it. I'm one way, and then when it's fight time or it comes close to fight time, there's this light switch, and I'm just this in the zone person. I'm looking to hurt people. I have bad intentions until immediately after they're unconscious, and then I feel kind of bad, and I want to help them.
And of course, I mentioned, coming off that win, of course, now you got to recover from the hand injury. But do you have a timetable of when you would want your next fight to be?
Honestly, and I keep preaching this and saying it, I don't know if they're ever going to talk to me. There's a UFC card in Norfolk, in my hometown, at the college that I wrestled at, in the same arena. That's in November. That was the game plan, to try to get a bunch of highlight KOs before that, and talk to Mick and Dana and Sean Shelby and be like, look, we could sell out that arena. My teammate from high school, middle school, college, Bubba Jenkins, he fights for ACB right now. He's fighting Bellator. We're trying to get him there as well, and we think it would be good to get us both there, because that would be a good, one, you get two high prospect fighters, and you give them a fight in their hometown. So if you're looking to sell tickets, put on a show, it's two kids you should get up there. Whether or not my hand is ready in time, I will still fight on that card. I will fight with one hand, no hands. I can still make it work. So that's what I'm looking for next.
I know when I've talked to guys who had hand injuries, they'll say, look, while I may not be able to use my hand, I can still get the road work in. I can still work on my kicks. I can work on other things. Yeah. Is that basically your mentality right now? Look, I'm not going to allow this injury to keep me out of the gym.
Oh yeah, for sure. This is one tool. I got seven other points on my body that I can do damage with outside of my wrestling. So, just because the shotgun is broken doesn't mean I got other tools in my arsenal that I can do damage with. So I'm not too concerned.
And we'll see when that next fight does take place. T, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on the various social media platforms.
You can follow me on Instagram. It's at T E Edwards. There's two E's in there. So T E Edwards. I don't really use my Twitter as much as I should. I think it's the same screen name, T E Edwards. Oh, it's underscore at the end. So at T E Edwards, and there's an underscore. So yeah, check me out. I post a lot of highlights, training videos. My son is up there all the time, and he's super adorable. So if you want to see just really cute kids, there you go.
How old's your son?
He'll be two this month. Wait, is it October yet? No. Next month, in October, he'll be two.
Do you bring him to the gym with you?
Yes, he is. I don't want to call him psychotic, but he's watched fighting since he was born, so mm-hmm. all he wants to do is fight. He walks around with his permanent, like, grrr, fight, daddy, fight, and he brings me gloves and mitts, and he just constantly wants to fight everything. It's adorable. So,
is that something that you would want your son to be a fighter down the road?
That wasn't my plan. I grew up in this combat sports life, and I know how hard it is, and I know that like the trade-off isn't the best in terms of professional sports. They don't pay us a whole bunch. We don't get all the attention. I wanted to use athletic skills for maybe baseball or something where we could, you know, profit, you know, get him, you know, a much easier lifestyle. But it seems to be in his genes, and he's surrounded by it constantly. So he's just, if he's watching something on TV, he's shadow boxing. Like, the kid has skills. He shadow boxes. He hits the bag. He got mitts. He's always just trying to spar with random people. Like, it's kind of concerning if you don't know him. So, yeah, it's fun.
And I appreciate T. Edwards coming on the podcast to talk about his recent victory, and we'll see what happens next for him. You know, he mentions that Norfolk card, you know, but you look at that Norfolk card the UFC's putting on, pretty much it is a full fight card already, but maybe a short notice opportunity if his injury does heal up a little quicker, maybe he gets the opportunity. You mentioned about Bubba Jenkins. Yeah, Bubba Jenkins. I would be highly surprised if Bubba Jenkins got a short notice fight in the UFC right now. Of course, Bubba is coming off that win against Diego Marlon, but of course, prior to that, back-to-back losses, loss in Bellator and then a loss in ACB. I mean, Bubba, I know he's talked about trying to get into the UFC, but you know, really going to take a couple of fights before Bubba can potentially get into the UFC. But coming up this weekend, we have UFC 216, Bellator 184. First up, I want to talk a little bit about Bellator 184. Of course, myself and Daniel Gavon will have a preview podcast coming up later on this week on Friday to talk about this matchup. Of course, a really solid fight card that Bellator has put together. It's a fight card that, as a recording of this podcast, doesn't seem like that. It has a lot of buzz, but it has a lot of great matchups that are part of this fight card. Of course, it's you've got a couple, you have bantamweight matchup between Leandro Higo and Joe Taminglo. You know, Leandro Higo, of course, made his Bellator debut earlier this year, took a short notice fight against Eduardo Dantas, did miss weight. I thought he performed really well in that matchup. So kind of, I guess, a little bit of a restart here for Leandro Higo in Bellator. Of course, Joe Taminglo, who's also had some weight problems in Bellator. So a nice matchup there at 135 pounds. And, of course, Pat Kern, who you heard from earlier on the show, taking on John Teixeira. You know, John Teixeira, a very durable guy. And this is going to be an interesting matchup. Probably a fight that goes all 15 minutes, but we'll see. I still do like Pat Kern in that matchup. And, of course, co-main event, Daniel Strauss and Emmanuel Sanchez. You know, something I mentioned a little earlier on in the podcast is Emmanuel Sanchez is a guy that has always gotten to a certain point. And when he fights that elite competition in the Bellator featherweight division, he's just unable to get the victory. So the question is can Emmanuel Sanchez take that next step? I mean, you look at his losses in Bellator, Daniel Vaichel, of course, you know, a title challenger, Pat Curran, you know, a former champion. You know, those are his losses in Bellator. When he's had that step up in competition, just has not been able to get that big win. So we'll see if he can get that big win against Daniel Strauss. And, you know, look, it would not surprise me if the winner of that matchup ultimately does get the winner of Patricio and Daniel Vaichel. Of course, taking place in November. Unfortunate thing about that fight, overseas fight, tape delay fight, and it's over in Israel. And so that fight card's on a Thursday and not airing till Friday here in the United States, which is unfortunate for MMA fans in the United States. And, of course, the main event of Bellator 184, Eduardo Dantas defending the bantamweight title against Darion Caldwell. You heard Caldwell earlier on in the podcast. It really would not surprise me if the winner of this matchup, their next title defense is against Michael McDonald, of course, going to make his Bellator debut in December. I don't see the winner of that fight fighting McDonald in December, but I think that's definitely what's being set up here. I really haven't decided on who my pick on this fight is, but I'm leaning Darion Caldwell because of that wrestling. He does have some unique takedowns. He's a much different wrestler than Joe Warren. You heard me asking about that a little bit earlier. But it'll be interesting to me to see if Eduardo Dantas can keep this fight on the feet. How does this fight go? That, to me, will be the very interesting aspect of this. And, of course, the preliminary card, as I mentioned, the reason to watch the prelims is for Cazola and Carrington Banks. By far the reason to watch this preliminary card. As I reported earlier this week, Gaston Renault out of this fight card, undisclosed reasons. Weston Wilson, who was a guest on this podcast last week, he will now take on LJ Hermreck. Also, I reported another matchup that was added to this fight card late, Kendall Carnahan versus Daniel Carey, both guys who only have one loss in their career. Kendall 5-1, Daniel 3-1, two guys out of that Oklahoma regional scene. But for the most part, the preliminary card is nothing but local Oklahoma, North Texas fighters there, because where the Windstar Casino is, it's literally right on the Texas Oklahoma border. I went there a couple of times. It's a nice little ride from the Dallas airport, but a huge casino, just a very huge casino there. And of course, it's a staple on the Bellator tour where they go out there. So I'll be watching on Friday night, looking forward to seeing how that fight card goes down. As I said, a very much an under-the-radar fight card, but a very good fight card that Bellator has put together there on Friday night on Spike. Of course, will begin 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time. Then, of course, on Saturday, it is UFC 216. You're going to have four fights on the early prelims on UFC Fight Pass. Be the feature matchup on the Fight Pass prelims will be Walt Harris versus Mark Godbeer. And then you've got the prelims on FX. Going to be feature a prelim on that one. Tom Dukenwald, Cody Stamann. Who does not love that matchup? That we had Cody on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Really looking forward to that matchup. I'll tell you that the whole FX prelims, just a solid lineup. I was telling my buddies, when we go out to watch UFC events, whether it's at someone's house or going out to a bar or restaurant to watch the fights, usually we try to get there between, say 9 and 9:30. But man, for this one, I don't know if I really want to miss those FX prelims. Obviously Dukenwald's name, and that's just a great matchup at 135 pounds. Brooks and Lentz, obviously, the backstory of that one probably is what's probably most interesting about it, is the fact of, Nick Lentz recently left American Top Team, and it's like right when Lentz left ATT, the UFC just pounced on this fight booking. So, Will Brooks, obviously the UFC run for him has not gone as well as he would have liked. Obviously came in after being the Bellator lightweight champion. He's lost back-to-back fights, lost to Alex Oliveira, which was a catchweight matchup where Oliveira missed weight badly. Brooks still took the fight, ended up a little bit of an injury situation there. And then back in April, losing to Charles Oliveira via submission in the first round. So we'll see if Will Brooks can bounce back here against Nick Lentz. A little bit interesting matchup there. Lando Vannetta, Bobby Green. I mean, this is a fight that I'm really surprised the UFC did not put on the main card. I would have thought maybe the female matchup they have on the main card would be on the prelims, because especially as a reporter or a podcast host, you always hate to sit back and say, oh, this fight can't suck. But this is one of those fights that you sit there and you can't see how this fight does not deliver. I mean, this should be an absolute amazing matchup. Also, Pearl Gonzalez on that card. Your main card on pay-per-view, you're going to kick off Beneil Dariush versus Evan Dunham. Matchup between two top 15 lightweights. And then, of course, you have the female matchup, Kalindra Fahea making her debut against Maria Romero Borella. as you know, as I said, kind of surprised that that fight got put on the main card on pay-per-view. I thought Vanetta Green would have made a ton of sense there. Then your top three matchups, which really, look, if you're tuning into the UFC 216 pay-per-view, it is for the top three fights. Verdum, Lewis, Johnson, Borg, Ferguson, Kevin Lee. We mentioned a little bit about Fabricio Verdum earlier on in the podcast. I mean, look, I think that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be rooting against Fabricio Verdum. And, you know, look, I think part of that is, you know, people just, I do think, like, kind of, you know, with some things have been written, you know, people are kind of, you know, just the act of Fabricio Verdum is wearing thin. And Derek Lewis is just a fan favorite. It was a great piece on Flow Combat this week, if you haven't had a chance to see that one. And but, you know, look, you know, when I look at the fight, it's tough to not pick Fabricio Verdum, just because I think from, you know, really the ground aspect of this fight, if he can get this matchup with the ground, I would imagine, this is just kind of my, when I think about this fight, I think Verdum tries to get Derek Lewis against the fence. I think he, you know, the last thing he wants to do is have a fight in range. And also, what's Derek Lewis look like? You know, we all remember retired after the loss to Mark Hunt, and, you know, of course, came out of retirement. And, you know, the article on Flow Combat talked about some of the changes he's made with his diet. So we'll see who goes there. Co-main event, Demetrius Johnson, Ray Borg. You know, I'm a fan of greatness. And ultimately, the co-main event is probably the number one reason of what is getting me in front of the television set on Saturday night. It's because I'm just a fan of greatness, and the fact of, you know, the chance for Demetrius Johnson to make UFC history for the most consecutive title defenses. I expect that to happen against Ray Borg. You know, we'll see what happens with Ray Borg. We all remember what happened at UFC 215 with him, and we'll see what happens there, but I do expect a Demetrius Johnson victory there. And then, of course, the main event, Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee. You know, I was listening to Ali Abdelaziz, his interview on Errol Hawani's show on Monday. And one of the things he said, that, and I think a lot of people will most likely disagree with what he said. And if you didn't hear the interview, what he said, because he was talking a lot about, you know, this fight, because obviously, you know, he has a lot of interest in this fight. You know, he represents Khabib Nurmagomedov. Also represents Justin Gaethje. So, you know, the lightweight division, you know, he's trying to get his guys into title fights, and he called Kevin Lee the A side of this fight. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with Ali. I'm not going to disagree with Ali, and this is why I'm not disagreeing with him. When you think about what makes people interested in a fighter and what ultimately gets them to the television set, a lot of it is about stuff outside of the cage. And Kevin Lee has taken advantage of that. The guy knows how to promote himself. He knows how to promote a fight. And that's why I don't have a problem with what Ali said in calling Kevin Lee the A side of this fight. I do like Tony Ferguson in this matchup, just because I think he has more ways of winning the fight. I think that's ultimately the way I look at him, is just the more, especially with the jiu-jitsu part of this aspect. But it's a big matchup, and, you know, I do think Kevin Lee, you know, he is trying to talk. I think he is trying to talk his way into a Conor McGregor fight. I don't think the winner of this fight ultimately will fight Conor McGregor's next MMA matchup. I think that will be against Nate Diaz, even though Conor has said he wants to wait and see what happens here, you know, in this fight before deciding what next. But, I mean, look, the Nate Diaz trilogy matchup is the biggest MMA money fight for Conor McGregor, and that's what I think ultimately will happen next for Conor McGregor. I would imagine, you know, you heard, you know, December the 30th has been a date that's been thrown around. I don't think that's probably likely. I think probably, you know, next time we see Conor McGregor in a UFC cage will probably be sometime in 2018. But, you know, a nice little matchup there. Of course, Kevin Lee, you know, really, you know, has, you know, he's done a great job of promoting himself, and that's part of this game. So that'll go down on Saturday night. Of course, on Friday, myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast. If you do have any questions or comments about those fights, or, you know, topics you want to hear myself and Daniel discuss, just hit me up on social media at Jason_Floyd, just like at DJ John Douglas did, where he asked if I thought the UFC would book the rematch between BJ Penn and Takanori Gomi. I think the answer to that is no. I just don't see Takanori Gomi getting another fight in the UFC. I think the only way you would see Takanori Gomi get another fight in the UFC is, you know, in a, you know, Japan type market. I just, you know, you look at the, you know, well, he's lost, what, five in a row now. You know, and of course, another stoppage loss there. So I just don't see that as something that is likely or the UFC would go about there. I mean, yeah, he's lost five in a row. His last win came back in 2014 against Isaac Valley Flag. So I don't see that going there. And, you know, and BJ Penn is also a guy that I tell you what, I, you know, at some point you have to, you kind of have to wonder is, you know, does the UFC kind of have that conversation with BJ that, you know, they just don't want to see BJ Penn fight again, you know, and we've seen it. We saw it earlier this year. You know, that Dennis Seaver fight and the Yair Rodriguez fight, just don't see, personally for me, I would like to see BJ retire, but, you know, it's one of those things, you know, fighters, you know, we talked about the Antonio Bigfoot Silva thing, you know, fighters are always going to want to fight, but ultimately it's got to be the people around them that ultimately tell them, hey, it is time to call it a career. So that is all coming up this weekend. I'm probably more looking forward to the Bellator card on Friday night than I am the UFC card, just because of, you know, there's more matchups on the Bellator card that have me more interested. You know, the UFC card, those top three fights on the pay-per-view interest me. You know, and I really like the FX prelims. I think those are two fight cards to pay, are really what you want to watch. I really like those prelims. Coming up on Saturday, of course, those will be on FX. So be sure to check your local cable provider so you know where those fights are taking place, not on FS1. So that is going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report podcast. I want to thank Darion Caldwell, Daniel Strauss, Pat Curran, Steve Cazola, and T. Edwards all coming on this edition of the podcast. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to my podcast. Of course, if you're not subscribing, do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. Really would appreciate if you would leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Would really appreciate if you would do that. Of course, also definitely check out my sponsor, Fight TV. Of course, they've got a ton of MMA wrestling and boxing. You can download that app, fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Of course, that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. So that's going to wrap it up for the MMA Report podcast. I will be back later this week to preview Bellator 184 and UFC 216 on the Preview Podcast.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Something that is topical, and I don't want to get into the a lot of details of the specifics of the whole college basketball scandal, but I want to at least touch on how it could have an effect and where this might affect the future of college football is. College basketball recruiting is different than college football recruiting, but there's certain elements that I think are transferable and potentially harmful as we go down the road of this path. But I want to, as it particularly pertains to the big news of the day yesterday with the firing of longtime athletic director Tom Jurich at Louisville and Rick Pitino, the basketball coach. Now, these are two guys that would not rank very high on the character list of individuals that while they've had success at points and times in their careers, certainly Tom Jurich's case has been an enabler. This is one of a long line of many issues that Rick Pitino's had off the field, scandals, not just minor things either, scandals. He would have never survived any of those had it not been for his success on the court as a basketball coach. But, you know, what does it really mean for Louisville and Bob Petrino, the football coach there? Remember that this was another character flawed guy that Tom Jurich hired, not once but twice at Louisville. Bob is mostly known for walking out on the Falcons and getting into a motorcycle accident and lying to his superiors at Arkansas about having an affair with a volleyball players slash, you know, young office assistant that he hired. And he was known for those two things. But he's also known for a guy that is kind of underhanded in a lot of his dealings in the coaching profession. He's a guy that's got a huge, huge closet that's full of skeletons. And really, no one knew that more than Tom Jurich, but hired him a second time. But now he's gone. A couple of things factually that you need to know. The buyout of, you know, if he were to leave, goes down by half if Tom Jurich is fired. Well, we know that the process of Tom Jurich's firing is undergoing right now. You know, for people who may be wondering, why didn't they just fire Patino and Jurich? Why do they go with the monkeying around of the suspensions and unpaid leave? Well, there are legal renderings here, and there's money being owed. In the case of Rick Pitino and his lawyer, he wants $44 million on top of, you know, the embarrassment of what he's done to himself, the sport, the university. He wants to be paid the $44 million. While that's unmitigated gall to the nth degree, this is what Louisville is legally fighting right now. So, all the legal maneuverings of, you know, unpaid leave, they're gone. Tom Jurich and Rick Pitino, they're gone, and they won't resurface at Louisville and maybe not anywhere. But what does it mean for Pitino? Well, it means that he can leave. Does he want to leave? I don't think there's any doubt that he's not going to be comfortable being at Louisville with a new administration that's going to have to clean things up. And I don't think he's going to fit the profile of a clean guy that that they want leading their program into the future.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.